Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to the VBAC Link podcast. My name is Lily. I am one of your hosts, and I am joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Paige. Hi, Paige.
Hey, Lil.
It's 1 a.m. where Paige is at, everyone.
And actually, it's 2:30 right now.
Oh, now it's 2:30. It was 1 a.m. when we started recording, and that's because today's guest is so, so special. We are so excited to welcome none other than Jen Hamilton on the podcast today. And I mean, Paige and I are geeking out a little bit.
Have you ever heard of the shopping cart theory, where like the test of someone's character is if they will return a shopping cart to the place where it's supposed to go? And when I think of Jen Hamilton, I think that she is the type of person who would take her shopping cart back, but then she'll also see a mom who's putting her kids away in their van and is far away from the shopping cart place, and she'll offer to take their shopping cart back with them too. She's fantastic. Her heart, she has a heart of gold, and we talk about all the things, birth and advocacy, informed consent. Oh, we're so honored to have her with us.
Yeah, truly. It was such a great conversation, and I am just so excited. You guys, her book is coming out. It's called Birth Vibes. Paige and I both had the honor of getting advanced copies to read, and it is so great. It is filled with so much knowledge, and she mentions this on our episode, but it also includes scripts of how do you speak to your provider? How do you talk to a nurse when maybe things are not going well with your nurse? And how do you get a new nurse and all of those things? And so many of you had questions when we posted that she was coming on the podcast about those things. And I want you to know that if they're not answered in this episode, it's likely that it's answered in her book. I feel like it's so comprehensive and really, really great. On the flip side of things, Paige and I were kind of talking about this. It's not a book that's specific to VBAC. So it really does, I think, really mesh really well with our heart, which is to prevent unnecessary cesareans. And how do you advocate for all of that, like the cascade of interventions and all of those things? But it's not a book that's specific to VBAC. So take that to heart as you read and dive in. And I think that there's so much still. And it does touch on VBAC a little bit in there, but I would not say that that's not the center of the book.
Yeah, exactly. And it's holding your plan with open hands and creating a birth vibes profile. I know a lot of us preparing for our VBAC, along with processing, we want to have the good vibes only. And I totally get that. As well as needing to hold space for pivoting potentially. And just a reminder that by doing that, you're not going to jinx your VBAC. Like by having a CBAC plan or something like that, or an intervention plan when you plan to go and have a spontaneous physiological VBAC, you're not going to jinx it by having preferences in the case that things go a different way.
Yeah. And Jen talks about that too in our episode, just to like, it's helpful to walk in a little bit open-handed. And one of our questions is, you know, what do you see set people up for success the most at the hospital? And Jen talked about how you can, you know, low intervention births are beautiful. And sometimes you can no intervention yourself to an emergency C-section, which I think is an important nuance to hear and to understand too. So I just think this conversation was so great. Equally, Women of Strength, Paige and I want you to know that we recognize that hospital birth is not
for everyone that so many of you listening are planning HVACs, that you're planning to birth outside of the hospital system, and we see you and we are cheering for you. And in no way does this mean that this is the way, right? Like, just because it's a book does not mean that it's the birth Bible. And it is a really helpful tool for those planning hospital births. And if that's not the route that you're going, we are cheering for you still. And we love you. And we think that that's a beautiful and fantastic option. And it's why we continue to feature HVAC stories and have home birth midwives on and all of those things. So that doesn't go anywhere just because we're having Jen on. And I wanted you all to know that too.
Yeah, exactly. And before Lily and I hosted the podcast, when I was a listener, I would use these provider episodes with Megan and Julie as a metric for what I needed to ask different providers that I was interviewing. Mm. And I would listen in and pretend like I was interviewing this particular provider and see what answers resonated with me and what answers maybe didn't in the type of birth that I wanted. I don't know. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, by having different perspectives on the podcast, that's really important to us. And by having Jen on, it's the perspective of a nurse. And her book really goes into a deep dive that only a nurse's mind can give you. And I thought that was really helpful. Like, I learned some things about different procedures in her book that she really walks you through because she knows them so well. So I think there's just value in education. We talk about this all the time. If you don't know your options, you don't have any, and knowledge is power.
Yeah, yeah. And not everybody is going to be for everybody. I think Jen is a peach. This is my favorite illustration in the whole world. She's a peach, and I think she's perfectly ripe, and she probably is just grown on a lovely peach tree. And some of you just might not like peaches. Maybe you prefer apples, and maybe you prefer nectarines or whatever it is, and that's okay. I think that we can still love and respect Jen as the peach that she is. And if apples or oranges or nectarines are more of your vibe, that's okay too. So don't miss this episode. I think it's so good. And without further ado, we'll be back after our intro with Jen. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the Feedback Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here with the one and only Jen Hamilton. Like, somebody pinched me. I cannot believe it. Thank you for joining us today, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just so honored to sit down and talk with you guys.
Oh my gosh. We cannot wait. Before we get into all of the good stuff, I'm going to read her bio. So we already know her and love her, but if you don't, you need to. And this is Jen. Jen Hamilton is a labor and delivery nurse, viral TikTok creator with over 6 million followers, and author of Birth Vibes, Stories and Strategies for an Empowered Birth, releasing May 2026, a warm, clinically grounded guide to navigating childbirth with confidence and calm. She is the founder of Hot Mess Express, a nonprofit offering judgment-free house cleaning and organizing for women in need, and a passionate advocate for dismantling systemic racism and misogyny in obstetrical and gynecological care, a 2026 President's Award recipient from the American Nurses Association, and a frequent presence in outlets including CNN, The New York Times, and The Huffington Post, Hamilton has become one of the most recognizable voices in modern nursing through her signature blend of clinical expertise, frank humor, and deep empathy. I'm like going to get emotional because
I was crying too. I'm like, I'm crying for Jen.
I'm so... Well,
Frank, my sister wrote that. This is the first time I'm hearing that. That's very kind, which all the nice things she said.
Oh, well, but truly, like, you are making such big, big waves in the birth community, and not just the birth community, in the world. And as a birth worker, I thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for the advocacy that you just advocate for. So thank you.
Well, thank you for the work that you guys do. I mean, I think that it's equally important. I think that this is such a great resource for people.
Thank you. Oh, man. I know. Even I had a couple, like, non-mom friends, and I was like, ooh, Jen Hamilton's coming on our podcast. And they're like, I'm freaking out for you. You are just, like, you're a household name, which is, like, aww, so cool. And, like, I don't know. I feel this way anytime someone, like, gets to be big. Like, you're just, at the end of the day, like, you're just a girl. Like, you're just a girl who, like, went big and, like, and is making, like, profound impact, not just in your community, but globally. And just, wow. So, Jen, you wrote a book.
I did.
I have it here. Paige got a virtual copy since she's in Korea. We've been able to both read and just be inspired by you. Can you tell us a little bit about why the book, you know, where did it come from, and, you know, how can people use this as a resource for their pregnancy?
Yeah. So one thing that, as a labor and delivery nurse in the hospital, that I was noticing was that people's birth experiences were so much less about the what happened and more the how it happened. And I was seeing people who came in with sometimes very specific birth plans about exactly how they wanted things to go. And then the grief and the sadness and the trauma that there can be if things don't play out that way. So I wanted to come up with something where no matter what happens, that you could have a plan that kind of builds a cocoon of safety around you to protect your core values and the things that make you who you are as a human. So I came up with the concept of birth vibes a few years ago, where I still want people to absolutely make birth plans and to figure out the kinds of things that they're interested in or not interested in and why. But at the same time, planning other things like how you need to be communicated with in order to feel heard and respected. What kind of information do you need to make informed and empowered decisions if things go different than you thought? What kinds of things trigger you? What kinds of things help you feel comforted? What do you want your environment to look like? Like, there's so many things that kind of build this bubble around you so that even if things go slightly different or if things go off the rails, you can still leave that birth experience feeling heard, empowered, respected, and seen.
Ugh, wow. Snaps all around. And I think that that's so profound, especially in our community. So many of us walk away from our C-sections questioning, you know, why and how did I get from here to here and all of those things. So as someone is processing maybe a birth that didn't go the way that they expected to, how can they prepare then for their next birth differently?
Oh, so important. So what I often tell people is that the first step in doing that is finding out the facts about what happened last time. I think that a lot of C-sections happen in really scary ways that inherently bring trauma. So I think that getting clarity on what happened last time can help you avoid those things next time. And when you're going into your next birth, identifying the things that were maybe your least favorite about the last delivery, whether it's the communication that you had, the way in which things went down, the values that you felt were maybe taken from you or that you didn't feel like were really at the forefront of how things happened last time. And in getting clarity through, whether that's through your medical records and having someone who knows that lingo to kind of sit down with you and give you layman's terms on what happened can help you navigate your next birth. And when you meet your care team for the day that you deliver, whether that is at the hospital, at home, at a birth center, wherever that is, I think that at least a small debrief about what happened last time and how your team can protect you this time, even if things go different than you hoped this time, there are still things that can be done to protect you emotionally, spiritually, physically, so that what happened last time doesn't happen this time. One of my favorite questions to ask people whenever I first meet them is, tell me about your last birth. What were your favorite parts about it? What was your least favorite part? Is there any part about your last birth that keeps you up at night, so that I can help protect them from those things going forward? Because if I don't know those things, I can accidentally step on a trigger that I didn't know was there. So me knowing those things absolutely helps me going forward and walking with people through their next delivery. And I think that sometimes when things happen quickly, or we're not given the opportunity to debrief about a birth right as it has happened, we can automatically fill in the blanks of what we don't know with trauma. Like the blanks feel traumatic always. Even if the blank in real life was something that just in the moment could have been communicated and been something that felt much safer, those blanks that we have in our memory, in the blanks that we have in the care that we received, can automatically be imprinted on our brain as traumatic. So having clarity about what happened before, not just the medical stuff of what happened, but how it felt and how it felt to be, you know, to have some control taken away from you, to feel like your autonomy wasn't there, can help your care team to be able to protect those core values in your next delivery.
I think that's something in your book that I really liked. And that's a tip is in your brain, in your nurse brain that you're sharing with us, you're talking about jump on that opportunity to debrief, because there are chances that you just won't get that chance to see that those specific people who were there at your birth right away, or they attend lots of births. And so even if our community didn't have that opportunity, that's something that you can prioritize for the next time. And it's difficult to, if something crazy happened, it's difficult to conceptualize like what I want to ask. But those are some things that you can write down a few questions, just like a little debriefing note or something like that, to prepare as part of your birth vibes plan.
Yeah. And something I can do for your listeners specifically is that I have a list of debrief questions that people can ask for their births, and I can send that to you guys as a downloadable if you'd like, so that people can have that for their next birth.
We would love that. So important. It makes such a difference, just having that extra piece of closure and attention for somebody to sit right there. Like, I know that I didn't quite get that with some of my births, and then I did get that with others, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And I love that you have that in your little birth vibes profile. It's not a birth plan, which I love. And I tell my clients that all the time as a doula, is like, these are our preferences. This is like plan A. And especially for my VBAC clients, like, what are we? I mean, I jokingly am like, plan C is our C-section.
Right.
Going there. But we have to be able to find a place that, where will we find peace no matter where our birth ends up? And so many of those protective factors, like you're talking about, do you feel like you got to be involved in shared decision-making? Do you feel like you had an opportunity to be informed? Do you feel like you had support? And all of those things are so protective, and getting to be a nurse in that space for so many, I just, like, what a high honor for you to get the hold to.
Definitely.
And I love that in this profile, it talks about, you know, like, these are some things that are triggering to me. These are some things that help me feel comforted. Any additional information? And I think the more that we can be brave and bold to communicate with our medical teams about those things, the better care that we receive. And also as doulas, we can be partners in that too. I've had a couple of clients that felt really triggered by like hearing their baby's heart tones. And so me and their nurse like made a plan outside of the room of, okay, if monitors need to be adjusted, maybe she like goes into the bathroom so it's further away from like the big machine. And how do we like be strategic partners? So I guess that's maybe another question that I have is, obviously Paige and I are doulas. So many of our listeners hire doulas. What does it look like to work with a doula as a labor and delivery nurse? And how can we as doulas be better partners for you as we pursue redemptive birth experiences and positive birth experiences for our clients around in general?
Well, I love a doula. That's when I walk into a room and there's a doula in the room, I immediately feel at ease about the situation. So, I mean, there's a lot of like trust building and rapport building that we as labor and delivery nurse have to do very quickly, because we are meeting you for the very first time, meeting our patients. And so when we come in, you know, there's a lot of ground to cover very quickly. And I see a doula as almost like a bridge between the two of us, because oftentimes you have known this client for much longer than we have. And so what I like to do with doulas is kind of get some background information about this person as a human being so that I can better care for them, especially if somebody comes in and like rip-roar in labor. Some of the questions that I want to ask my patients, I don't feel like it's a great time because they're already doing so much. So like, for instance, you know, I'll go to the doula and say, hey, tell me about the birth plan. What are the most important things? Is there anything about her previous, kind of like what we talked about? Is there anything about previous deliveries that I can help protect her from this time? Is there anything that's really comforting to her? Anything that's triggering to her? Like, these questions, when someone is actively laboring, are very hard to discuss. So having that doula is like a really comforting thing to me, because it's like I have a partner in this with me. There's a story in the book about a patient sister who happens to be a doula, and like the beautiful symphony of us working as a team together, kind of holding her up emotionally and literally. So yeah, I think having that background information is very helpful to me as a nurse. And I definitely cannot stand it there if there's a nurse that's like automatically against doulas. Like, I just feel like that's a red flag. I freaking hate that. So I think that the more collaborative we can be, because another thing that I do with doulas is like, hey, what kind of position changes do you suggest in this situation? Like, hey, we've tried this, this, and this. Like, I love, because you guys have so much more training in the support aspect than we ever have or ever will. So learning from you guys is awesome for me too, because there's so many like cool labor hacks, birth hacks that I've learned from doulas.
Yeah, I love it when nurses and providers have that same attitude. Like you said, I think it's really tough when you walk in and there's like a nurse that's like, ooh, I can tell that you think something about my client because I'm here. You know, like there's an assumption that's being made. I had a really great OB at a birth a couple weeks ago. She was like, she's younger and she kept walking in and my client was in like all kinds of wacky positions. And this OB was lovely and just kept being like, ooh, tell me about this one. Like, what is this supposed to do? And like, how can we? And I just love that she was humble enough to say like, yeah, I am an MD. I am the doctor here. And like, I have something to learn. And I think we really all have something to learn from one another. So I think collaborative care makes for a better experience for our clients, for sure.
Taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
So speaking of birth stories that are in your book you talk about a particular Tolak story and kind of walk us through what her preferences were. Can you kind of in general walk us through what does it look like when you have a VBAC in your room? How do you help to prioritize what their end goal is of having a VBAC, and also when things maybe go a different way, how do you support them in that processing?
Yeah, so it was very important to me to put, I kind of had to be creative in the way that I put these stories in there, because all of the stories are real things that have happened in real life, but I had to kind of combine them with other stories or other patients to kind of keep everything HIPAA compliant. But it was important for me to point out two things. I started out the chapter talking about a VBAC that went awesome. I like, because honestly, I get such a high from a VBAC. It's pathological, honestly, because I absolutely love it. I just had one on, I worked this weekend. I had somebody that I took care of Saturday and Sunday, and she had a, whoa, I'm giving myself balloons on our little media.
Happy birthday to the baby.
So I had somebody that I took care of on Saturday and Sunday who really wanted a VBAC because she had a small toddler and she really didn't want to have to go through another C-section again. And what an honor it was to be able to take care of her both days and get that freaking VBAC safely, emotionally, spiritually, physically, like all of it was just amazing. So I wanted to start out the chapter on that high, like that this happens most of the time. And I also wanted to point that out, that like most VBACs go great. And then also I needed a way to kind of put a situation in the book where something went different than we hoped. And everything turns out in the end, everybody's safe in the end, but it can be kind of a roller coaster to go in there. And spoiler alert for people who will read the book, this is a patient who ended up with a heart condition, which had nothing to do with her being having a trial of labor after cesarean. It had nothing to do with that, but this was just her specific story. And that heart condition caused us to have to pivot quickly from our original plan of vaginal birth to a C-section, but doing so in a way that kept her feeling emotionally safe through that process. So yeah, I think that having a patient who has these things go differently, I think that it's very important for us to talk about those stories, but also how we can hold core values close, even if things go a little bit different than we thought.
Well, and that story, another spoiler, if I may, at the end, you guys, she talks about how, well, first she talks about how this mama really wanted a VBAC. And we know how that feels. We know how that feels so deeply, how we want to go for that VBAC and we want that victorious vaginal delivery. And how her mom was saying, you don't get a gold medal if you have a vaginal delivery. And she's like, I know, but it's something I really want. And she ended up not getting it. And what did Jen do? As her sweet nurse made her a gold medal. Like how touching. And I was that mom. Like, I've never had a VBAC. I've only had CBACs. And if I had a nurse who did that for me, like, oh, so thank you. Like, again, and I'm not like just trying to make this groveling or whatever, like, but truly that's the kind of care, intentional care that we need. And that inspires me to be a better birth worker. Little touches like that, because we know that that is the stuff that helps mitigate birth trauma. That's why it's so important to birth workers. And anyway, so I guess a question that I have too, back to nurses and doulas, and you can pick a doula, but there are parts of your team that you can't pick. So something that our community asked, we put out a little Q&A, things they want to know from you. What is something that you can advise our community if they go in and have a nurse that they really feel is not VBAC supportive? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So in the book, I put really specific scripting around how you can advocate for yourself. So there's one thing about me, I am a people pleaser, right? So if I'm in an uncomfortable situation, I am much more likely to deal with that situation in my own discomfort and kind of just like let things happen the way they happen rather than advocate for myself. Now, there is always the option of you saying, hey, I need another nurse. That is absolutely 100% okay. But I wanted to put scripting in there that could allow you to have the conversation without feeling like you're, you know, making a huge deal about something or that you're, you know, becoming a burden. Like, I know what that feels like. So I wanted to first let people know it is absolutely okay for you to ask for another nurse. And in the book, I talk about how you can highlight the thing that you need from that nurse that you feel like you're not getting. And also, like, everybody's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, right? So, like, the way that I care for somebody may be triggering to them and they don't like the way that I'm making them feel. But that doesn't mean that there isn't another nurse who does really well with that. I've been in plenty of situations where I've been asked to come in and care for a patient who needed less of, like, a direct approach and needed kind of more, you know, soft approach on things. So in the scripting, I talk about how, you know, you can call the nurse by their name, you know, let's say Trisha, right? Thank you, Trisha, for taking, you know, care of me so far. I can see that you have a really direct approach, and I know that that can really be helpful to some people. For me specifically, I need someone with a softer approach. So I thank you in advance for helping me facilitate a change of a nurse to someone who has a softer approach. That may go awesome. And if it doesn't, then I give specific, you know, algorithm of like, hey, if that doesn't get you what you need, then you ask for this person. And this is what you say. If that doesn't get you what you need, like, that would be crazy if you really couldn't get what you needed by that point. But I give an algorithm for like, okay, we're going to escalate it past that. But I really just want to empower people to not deal with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have somebody who you really are not vibing with, it's okay to get another one. Because guess what? Unless you're at like a really rural hospital with no other nurses, there's always someone else. So I want to empower people to, if you're really feeling like you're not vibing with somebody, to advocate for yourself. And you can even enlist the help of your support people to help advocate for you. But you know, and your body knows if you feel safe with someone. And if you do not feel safe with someone, don't put up with it. And, you know, it doesn't mean that that nurse isn't going to be awesome for somebody else. They're just not your person, and that's okay.
Mm, I love that. On this kind of like nurse train, one of our listeners, Ariana, said, as an L&D nurse myself, what's Jen's opinion on why so many providers are scared to support VBACs, even when much of the data shows that it's a safe option for most women? Do you have any thoughts on that, like, fear around vaginal birth after cesarean?
Yeah, I think that it all comes from, to be honest, litigation. I feel like providers get, so OB is the most litigious area of medicine at all. So in some states, you have up to 18 years and longer to sue for a bad outcome. And I think that it is not, that feeling is not out of fact. It's out of fear of litigation. So I think that there's so much control that providers feel that they have, or so much more control that they feel that they have if it's a C-section, if it's done quickly, if, you know, we're able to, you know, prevent bad outcome to the baby. But I think that so much is lost when we think about just the baby outcome, like what our bodies go through during a C-section, the, you know, potential implications for future pregnancies through a C-section. One of the most frustrating things as a nurse is to see how I can tell your chance of a C-section versus vaginal delivery when I walk in and see who's going to take care of you for the day as far as your doctor. Some doctors have really, really low C-section rates, and some have really, really high C-section rates. And I think that there's a happy medium. You know, I think that there's just so much fear around bad outcome. And I will say this, like, as an OB person, we see all kinds of outcomes, good, bad, really, really ugly outcomes. And I think that, you know, the trauma that we experience as healthcare providers pales in comparison to the you know, the trauma that the patient feels. But we carry it with us through each delivery that we're, you know, that we're walking with someone through. And so if a provider has a really bad outcome, it's only going to bias them going forward, like trying to protect against that. So I think that it comes from, if I'm going to put it in one word, fear. Fear of litigation and fear of a bad outcome that they feel like they could prevent if they just had a C-section. But they don't have to deal with the implications in future pregnancies because we're just dealing with this birth right here. Like if I can just get a good, and I'm putting this in air quotes, a good outcome for this delivery, then I'm safe, right? So I think that it just comes from fear, and I hate that.
As a birth worker, how do you personally process some tough stuff that you see? And then also, how do you not let it affect the way you care for the next person in the next room?
Yeah. So my personal philosophy is that my job is just to help you have all the information that you need to make a decision. And then past that, you make your own grown girl decision and I stand behind you 10 toes. I think that also there is this need that birth workers need to have, like to be able to check our own biases, right? So it's easy for labor and delivery nurses, OB docs, even sometimes midwives to have a bias against something like home birth. And why is that? It's because the only home births that we see are the really bad ones. And so for every home birth that goes different than someone thought and they end up, you know, being transferred into, you know, our care, there's, you know, a zillion, not an actual zillion, but, you know, a zillion more who we never see that went awesome. So I think that in order to not take things personal or to be able to look at things through a more evidence-based lens is to understand that our own personal feelings about things are shaped by the things that we see. And the things that we see, even the bad stuff, is very rare. And to understand that sometimes people are going to make choices that maybe we wouldn't do, but it doesn't make that a wrong or a bad choice. It just means that that's their informed and empowered decision. So I've had to kind of like divorce my self-worth from, you know, compliance, right? Because I feel like that's a lot of what we sometimes aim to do in OB is like, okay, what do I need to say to get her to do what I want her to do? You know, and that's like a dirty secret of OB, I guess, is just that, you know, how do we have good outcomes? Well, it's just if people will listen to us. And that's not how it is at all, because the things that I might decide for myself by weighing the pros and cons of each decision is different from what you or someone else would do for themselves. And so I have to trust women. I have to trust that they are going to make the best decision for themselves and divorce my self-worth from, you know, wanting people to do what I want them to do, because what I want to do has nothing to do with what is best for them. So I think that if people were able to do that more, I think that it could lead to more supported, informed, and empowered decision-making within OB.
Ugh, that's so good. So I think you've touched on this in videos and things like this, and sort of where this conversation is going is, at the end of the day, our nurses, our OBs, our midwives are also human. Mm-hmm. And it can be really easy in the VBAC world to be like, oh, you just have to find a new provider then. Like, if you're not getting the support that you need, like, just find a new provider. And you mentioned rural areas or areas where access maybe to providers and just the like, oh, we'll just like move on to the next one, mm-hmm. might be more limited. So how, as patients, can we walk into a conversation perhaps with a provider that has a really hard and fast like no, or they're not willing to partner with someone in their hopes for how their birth is going to go? Is there a way to approach the humanity piece of it without being so combative of like, well, this is what I want, and I'm also standing over here on this other end saying, well, this is what I want, and there's just such a divide. Like, how can we come at it as humans and ask questions and get curious and perhaps come to some sort of resolution or understanding, especially when access to providers is limited?
Yeah. So I think that that conversation doesn't have to be combative at all. And I think that a lot of providers do come at it as combative if, you know, when a patient's like, well, I, you know, this is what I would like. So I think that humanizing yourself with your provider, kind of giving the backstory of why these things are important to you, can help humanize that decision-making process in a way that's not like, well, this is the decision that I'm going to make for you, you know, as the provider to the patient. And then employing that provider with their help. So for instance, you can say, hey, I had a really traumatic C-section last time. So something that's really important to me is having a vaginal birth this time because, and you can XYZ, like, you know, the recovery was really rough, or, you know, I felt out of control of my body, or, you know, like these kinds of things were taken from me. This is how it affected me as a human being. How can you help me achieve a vaginal birth after C-section? So I think that kind of employing their help after humanizing what happened to you can allow a provider to come at it more from like, I'm coming alongside of you in offering you my expertise and assistance in how we can get this for you, so that it's less of like a combative conversation. I hate it when it turns combative because I think it comes from like defensiveness from the OB, like, what, you don't trust me? Like, I feel like that's where it comes from. So I think that kind of getting their help and asking how they can help you and not saying like, will you help me? But more like, how can you help me do this?
That's great. I'm going to shift topics completely. Okay. That's okay. One of our listeners, Rebecca, asked if there was a big differentiator that you see in the hospital between someone that has a successful VBAC and someone that maybe ends up in a repeat cesarean. And I know you kind of talked about, you can tell by their provider and things like that. Are there any other factors that you feel like play a really big role, especially someone's kind of navigating the hospital system again?
Yeah. So I think that when someone comes into the hospital, having had a not great experience the first time, their birth planning experience for the second time becomes very important. And through that, sometimes we can demonize intervention as inherently evil, right? So we go into a birth experience saying like, I'm not having any interventions because we know the cascade of interventions can lead to C-section. So there's this feeling of like, if I don't start that, then I'm less likely to have a C-section. Now, I want to give credence to that, but that is true. Like the more that we can, you know, pause on the cascade of interventions. The caveat that I give to that is that interventions are made for labors or births that are going different than we hoped. So starting the cascade of interventions in a labor that's going awesome absolutely can lead to C-section. You can also decline intervention all the way to an emergency C-section. So I think that holding interventions in your mind as tools to use when things go different rather than inherently good or evil, because that's their purpose, is to be able to send us back on track to a vaginal birth rather than farther away. So interventions can be used for both. Interventions you can throw the whole toolbox at somebody and increase their chances of a C-section, or we can pick carefully from our toolbox of interventions when things are going different than we thought in order to steer us back on track. So I caution people from saying like, in no circumstances would I ever do XYZ, because sometimes information is power. So if you have something that's going differently, your team telling you, hey, you know, we've got this new situation, allow that new situation to inform your decisions going forward rather than, you know, kind of trying to stay to that plan if things are going different. So that's one thing that I see that can kind of send people off track. The other thing is in birth prep. I see that sometimes people have like a list of things that they want to try as far as like coping techniques, like let's say, you know, you're wanting a more unmedicated or low intervention birth. I think that sometimes people have things that they want to try that they've never tried before they get into labor. And then they recognize within themselves, like, hey, this isn't what I thought it would be. So I think that in birth prep, try things, like try to see how things feel to you. You can also, you know, kind of prepare your mind to withstand certain amounts of pain for a certain, you know, like holding an ice cube in your hand and trying coping techniques while you're doing that so that you know what your body and mind is likely to like or not like. And then also giving yourself grace. I think that in birth prep, as far as coping goes, sometimes we plan for, let me give an example. Okay, we plan for like a water birth. I love a water birth. I absolutely will sign up for water births all the time. But what I find in that preparation is that some people go into it thinking, okay, the water is going to take my pain away. And there can be some disappointment and sometimes even trauma of like, this is what I thought was going to happen and it's not this way. So having good expectations around the coping techniques that you'd like to try, and then pivoting and giving yourself grace if it's not what you thought and trying to maybe try something different. So I think grace for yourself, and then also holding interventions in an open hand as far as like tools to use rather than just inherently good or evil.
I love that. And that's a piece of my story. My VBAC was long. I had a 66-hour VBAC. It was so great.
No.
Highly recommend.
I'm so mood.
My midwife is like, I'm promising nothing because my first birth, I was like nearly complete and my kiddo flipped breech. And so she was like, my whole second pregnancy was like, I have a feeling that like this is going to go so much faster. Like it's going to be great. Yeah. And we hit, my first birth was 44 hours prior to my cesarean. And we hit 44 hours and I hadn't even left my house for the hospital yet. And I was like, oh, crap. And we ended up doing things that I never expected. You know, I got a little bit of IV pain relief. We did a like smidge of Pitocin. And I also think it comes back to having a provider that you really trust. I knew without a shadow of a doubt that like my provider, that my nurses were cheering for my success and that none of this was because I was being a pain in the butt. I had been there for too long. Everything looked great. And when I started to ask about Pitocin, I was the one that brought it up. My midwife was like,
let's speed this up.
He was like, you could do some sideline release, which I hate, or sure, we could try a little bit of pit. And I was like, sign me up for the pit because I can't stand to be in sideline release ever again. Yeah. That's the worst. And I needed it for an hour and I was pushing. Yeah. And so sometimes you just have to walk in open-handed and surrendering and know that if you have the team that is the hope that you have, that those interventions ultimately can be beneficial when things are pivoting. And sometimes the pivoting doesn't even look like, oh, baby's in distress or things are going funky. Right. Sometimes it's like, man, I have been in labor for 10,000 years.
Yeah.
I'm real ready for something to change.
And asking questions like, hey, this is how I'm feeling. What are my options? Like, what can I do? Because I think that sometimes whenever I am caring for somebody who really wants a low intervention birth, I don't ever bring up options because I don't want you to think that I'm like pushing things on you. But yeah, if you're feeling some type of way, just how you were like, hey, I'm feeling like this is lasting a really long time. What are my options to kind of do something else? I think that's a powerful question to ask.
Yeah. And to preserve, like my hope, my end goal was to have a water birth. And so to preserve that, my midwife was like, okay, well, she told me no to an epidural a couple times and I love her because that's exactly the firmness that I needed. And okay, great. Let's try some IV fentanyl and see if that takes the edge off enough for you to be able to achieve this birth that you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Paige, were you going to say something too? Sorry, I think I cut you off.
No, yeah, like along those same lines, a different conversation that I had with my providers was when baby didn't look great on the monitors and my providers knew that the thing I didn't want was another stat C-section under general anesthesia. Like I didn't want to be asleep. So we had those conversations and then we pivoted as we needed to that way, even though it wasn't what I wanted, but like that communication was there because there was trust. So,
And even you like, relaying that that was one of the most traumatic parts, is like having to be asleep, you know? So your team knowing that can help protect you from that part going forward. So if things start to turn differently, you know, knowing that you didn't want a stat C-section is so powerful, because like, how do we do this? If it is going to end up in a C-section, how do we make this as least traumatic as possible?
And that's part of processing, I think, too. It's mm-hmm. not just, oh, this whole birth was traumatic, but it's like taking that time to really sit with it. And that's hard. Like, that can be a difficult, long process, but also just like, what parts can I specify felt more sticky than others? Anyway, can you share your baton analogy for those who have not heard it? Because I share it with all my clients.
Yeah. So this is especially true if you're wanting to avoid an epidural or delay an epidural, if that's what you're wanting. So I tell people that labor is a baton race of coping. So you're going to have different players in your labor. And I want you to be thinking about those during your pregnancy. So these are all your track meet team members, right? So whether that is the use of water, whether that's breathing, whether that's, you know, being on a ball, different position changes, all of these are your different track meet team members. And I want you to hold the baton in your hand each of these batons into your hand as long as humanly possible before you reach for the next one. Because what I tell people who, especially people who've never had a baby before and they don't know what labor is about to be like, they can, what I say is, blow their load early. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to run through every single coping technique that I learned within the next 3 hours. And then they're at the end of their cope rope with nothing more to hang on to other than the epidural. So I say, if you're getting to the end of your cope rope using a certain tool, whether that's a birth comb or a different position, I challenge people, can you do one more contraction? Can you do one more before you reach for the next one? Because you're only going to have a certain amount of contractions until your baby comes out. We just don't know how many that is. So the longer you can go, however many contractions you can go, trying to use the same coping techniques before reaching for the next one, you're going to get farther.
I love that. I think that, and you brought this up earlier, of like the ways in which we can practice birth too. And it goes back to that, because then you have almost the ability to hold on to your baton a little bit longer if you've practiced and you can recall and you can send your body back to safety signals.
Also including your support people in that process too, where they can practice with you, because I can't tell you how many Dwaynes I've met who have no clue about their sweet girl's plans for them during labor, and how they need like hip squeezes or help grounding or breathing. I mean, and they just like pat them like, you're doing a good job, you know? So I think that practicing your coping techniques with your support people can also be super helpful.
Paige. I'm just going to say, okay, one of my favorite things I've had a dad say, like, funnily, like, I think he just, like, didn't know what to say, and he was patting his wife on the back, exactly that, and he just kept saying, I appreciate you. I appreciate you. And I was just like, I mean, I think that's really sweet that you appreciate her, but we maybe need some other lingo that we could say.
What a guy. Okay, so that's what I was going to say, is what have been some great things that you hear from partners, or just when you see a team, you're like, okay, they've got it going on.
Yeah. Well, one funny thing that a dad said was, we were pushing and she was kind of like losing steam a little bit. And he's like, let's go Lightning McQueen. I was like, what did you just say? He was like, ka-chow. But I kind of gave the room some levity and kind of gave her a little bit more of a, you know, she can get through it. And sometimes laughing during pushing is super helpful. I think that anything that a partner does that avoids trivializing what she's going through, such as just breathe, like as if whatever he's saying is just going to fix the situation. That bothers me so much. I'm like, she is breathing. But instead of that, breathing with her, right? Focusing on breath, grounding her in that situation instead of just like, just relax, just breathe. Do it with her, right? Like, look me in the eyes. You are safe. We're going to take, you know, one big deep breath in through our nose. Let's do it together. Out through our mouth, like helping ground them in that situation instead of just the pat, you're doing a good job, I think can be very helpful.
I made my husband a list on my phone of things that he could say. He did not refer to that list.
But I have lists whenever they get into.
But I remember specifically being like, these will be words that'll be really helpful for me to hear from you. So I'm gonna like write them all down. And yeah. I mean, he's great. Like he's the ultimate. He could be a doula. He's a dad doula. But yeah. I just remember being like, I really need to hear these things for you. And now I'm like, I recall nothing of what you said to me, right. Labor, and it's okay. So I think there's also a little bit of grace for our partners in that space too. And when you can practice ahead of time or, you know, communicate well with your partner so that they have expectations of what to go in with. And that's where we as doulas get to have that conversation too. It's one of my favorite things in my prenatal curriculum to talk with doulas and clients and their husbands about,
yeah,
here are ways that you can support her so that when you're at home in early labor and you're lost, you can find this page and you can go through. It's an acronym of support, SUPPORT. And it's great and helpful to be able to walk through that, you know? So on this vein of stories or funny stories or memorable stories, do you have a particularly like memorable or someone asked like what your craziest VBAC story was? I know you tell many stories in your book, but do you have any that feels like this is the, if all VBACs could go this way, I wish it was this or something, yeah, or funny?
So I'll just say that every single VBAC is special for different reasons, right? Like, so I think that, you know, being able to walk through a situation where I am in the place where someone is feeling redemptive about something that previously happened. Oh, it's just phenomenal. I still cry at births, like, especially if it's something where this feels like something that's healing something from them. It's just so incredibly special. Like I said, I walked through one just this weekend. And so seeing the dad at delivery who did not get to experience like seeing his baby come out the first time, you know, and watching this grown man just puddle up into a ball of joy, you know, watching his wife do something that was really, truly, you know, it's amazing however birth happens, but to have the different experience this time where it felt redemptive, like she felt like she had the experience that she wanted from before. It's just such an amazing place to be. Like, what an honor that I get to be there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So as women in our community are maybe pursuing VBACs with different diagnoses or tricky diagnoses, I know you've made videos on things like failure to progress and how that can affect VBAC success, or things like preeclampsia or just hypertension in general. And if these women are pursuing a VBAC and they have a provider that is partnering with them in that, have you seen those kind of rare circumstances work out? What does that look like kind of in your heart as a nurse if you see someone that maybe has a like a tricky diagnosis or kind of a tricky way of navigating TOLAC?
Yeah.
How do you support someone in those types of scenarios?
Well, I always tell people that no matter what happened last time, anything could happen this time. So even if you have like a lower on paper chance of success, there could have been things that happened in that previous birth that we're not planning on doing this time. Like maybe the first time you were quote unquote failure to progress, which I freaking hate that term. I feel like in the next 10 years, we're going to come up with better stuff, you know? But maybe that first one that was termed failure to progress, maybe you came in for an elective induction and your cervix was thicker than a Snicker and we broke your water at 1 centimeter. And like, maybe there were things in that birth in particular that we can plan differently this time and have a different outcome. So even if things feel stacked against you, it doesn't necessarily mean that things will turn out the way that stats or whatever say that it might. I think that just, you know, collaborating with a team that you trust, like, I just think that is the most important part of this, so that even if you do have tricky diagnoses, having someone on your side who knows what's important to you and also wants to keep you and your baby safe, I think that's like the sweet spot of being able to have a redemptive birth experience.
Okay. Paige, do you have anything else that you want to throw at Jen?
Oh, well, maybe just before we close out, our mission is twofold. Well, it's making birth after cesarean better, and that's providing access to VBAC and options for women who want a VBAC, and then also making cesareans better. So what in your mind can we do to help make cesareans better?
There's so much about cesarean. Like, if I was the leader of cesareans, like, there's so many things that I would do to make it better. I think that better preparation, education on the front end, like prenatally, about what a C-section looks like, feels like, smells like. Like, I feel like having expectation around that can make things feel less scary when they do happen. I wish that we could give patients who want it access to see what the operating looks like before we're rolling back, because being in a familiar place can feel less scary. I think that we need to better have access to support in the operating room. So whether that's having doula support and also earlier partner support in the operating room. I feel like it's pretty standard that we kind of keep support people outside of the operating room till we're ready. And I'm putting that in air quotes. So, you know, preparing, you know, sterilely prepping the abdomen and, you know, making sure that we get our spinal in or whatever. I believe that there's opportunities for support people to be there during that time. I think that we kind of infantilize people who, you know, we just anticipate support people to, you know, everybody's going to pass out or everybody's going to touch the sterile stuff. I think that people are adults, and a lot of times we're able to follow instruction like, hey, don't touch this. Okay, cool. I feel like we infantilize people to think that they're not capable of following OR sterile technique. Just don't touch stuff. Like, that's okay. You could just sit right here and hold her hand and be with her during this scary thing. So I really wish that we had better access to support people in the operating room. I think that however we can humanize the experience, whether that's through relaxing music, whether that's cutting down on chatter in the operating room about other stuff that's not what we're talking about right here, you know, because a lot of times us as OB people, I mean, we do this all day, every day, so it doesn't feel like this, you know, it should feel like this, but it can feel very routine to us instead of like this sacred moment for somebody. So, you know, maybe don't talk about what you're ordering for lunch or talking about things that might sound scary as far as, you know, what we're looking at in the abdomen, or, you know, just keeping in mind that people can hear what you're saying. Skin to skin in the OR. Oh my gosh, please, skin to skin in the OR. That, I feel like that should be standard. I feel like we're at the precipice of maybe that being standard. It's standard at my hospital, so I know that it's possible. I think that just with everything in OB, there's just this big hurdle to overcome where we're doing something new, and there's a lot of pushback, a lot of places. But I'm here to tell you, it can be done, and I think it can be done well. So I think that skin to skin would be huge for making C-section more human.
Agreed.
That's great. Jen, I don't know if you know, but Paige had a maternal assisted cesarean, and so got to help deliver her baby.
Oh, that's so cool. Did you feel like you had a lot of pushback whenever you brought it up? Like that's what you were, something you were interested in?
So I looked at two places. So here in South Korea, not a lot of options. Right. But there's the military hospital, and then there's a clinic that I found, which functions like a birth center, but also has an OR on site.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's like super goes against the grain because Korea has like a 60 to 70% cesarean rate, mostly anesthesia. What? Yep. Most of their anesthesia partners are not allowed in the OR. Like it's nuts out here. So I asked the military hospital just like some basic things about skin to skin, how they routinely do stuff. And they don't allow, you know, like they don't do the skin to skin. They don't allow doulas. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go this other place. How do you routinely do it? They showed me this book, skin to skin all the time. They had a sheet with a cutout that they just slide baby through. And I was like, what if we just don't have the sheet? Could we try that? And the doctor was super open. And I showed him some videos from the internet that I saw, which is why I feel so passionately about what you do and what we do in this, in our corners of the internet. And I was like, will you sit and watch this video with me? And he was like, is that what you want? And I was like, I think that would be really special. He was like, let's make it happen. So I think just finding providers who routinely practice as close to it as possible will get you the least amount of pushback.
Yeah, definitely.
And like you were saying, Jen, like it is, it's hard when there's like a new thing to even conceptualize what that looks like. As a doula, I've been really grateful for at our hospitals, it's anesthesia's call, whether or not we can come back for the spinal. And I have not yet had an anesthesiologist tell me no. So I agree with you though, that like we still ditch dad a moment and they let me as a doula in. And I'm like, I just want you all to know that I have no more medical training than this father. Right. Like I happen to be a birth a lot, but as far as that goes, like, can we maybe like make that happen? Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Well, as we close, we won't keep you longer because we had all of our lovely tech issues before we hopped on. Can you tell us when your book is coming out? Where can people find your book? All of the things.
Yeah. So my birth is called My Birth. My baby book is called Birth Vibes, and it comes out May 5th. You can get it anywhere that you get books. You can pre-order it now so that on May 5th, it'll be at your house. And you can find me anywhere you find people, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, wherever, just by searching Jen Hamilton, you'll find me.
Ugh, amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on today. It was truly just like a privilege of a lifetime for Paige and I to get to chat.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much. What an honor it was for me to be here.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.